Well, hi, this is Jay Arthur, and welcome to Six Sigma Simplified, the proven way to increase productivity and profitability, even in tough times, systematically and reliably. And to get started, what I'd like to make sure you have is a sheet of blank paper, because we're going to be taking some notes, and we'll also give you directions about where to go retrieve this information on our website. If you'd like to follow along on our website, it's www.qimacros.com/qiwizard/tools.html. And to begin, what I'd like you to do is just kind of think a little bit about your business, about the defects and delays in your business. I got into the quality business back in 1980. I was working in the phone company. We brought in Florida Power and Light to enlighten us about their Deming Prize-winning improvement process. And we were doing absolutely everything they told us to do. You know, I spent a week in team leader training and a week in facilitator training and a week as a trainer training and then training people and starting teams, and we started hundreds of teams. And one of the things I noticed was the teams weren't making any progress. And so I wondered, well, maybe I could apply total quality to total quality to see why our teams weren't succeeding. And I began to find some methods to make what is can be a very difficult process simple. And that's been my whole journey. And the very first time that this really worked for me, we were having too many false fire alarms in the building. And the building manager and I sat down and said, well, maybe we can use quality to solve this problem. And so, lo and behold, we sat down and took a look at the data. And it turned out there had been 11 false fire alarms. Two of them were kind of curious. It was when we were testing cell phones. And you got to remember, back in 1991 or two, cell phones weren't as ubiquitous as they are now. So it turned out that the false fire alarms were actually caused by when people were sending, you know, hitting talk on their phone. Well, we had the facilities, because we were a research lab, to test all this stuff, and it turned out that all of the fire detection equipment in that building would go into alarm mode when subjected to radio frequency interference from a little cell phone. So out of this came national standard efforts to point this out across the board so that fire detection people would understand it. We made that building a cellular-free zone to prevent these fire kind of unnecessary events where 600 people would file outside in all kinds of weather and then have to wait to come back in. It was a very powerful demonstration to me that in a very short time we could find the root cause of seemingly insolvable problems. And so I just want to walk you through this process and suggest to you some ways that you can start to do this in your own business, and ways to implement Six Sigma that are really contrary to everything that people are telling us in the media, but are proven methods that will work even better for you. And I've used them myself to succeed at implementing Six Sigma in my own environment. So I'd like you to get your blank sheet of paper, and what I'd like you to do is draw a vertical line down the center from top to bottom, and then a horizontal line across the middle, so we end up with four equally sized boxes. In the top left-hand corner, I'd like you to write the word focus. In the top right-hand corner, I'd like you to write the word improve. At the top of the bottom right box, I'd like you to write the word sustain. And in the bottom left-hand box, write the word honor. And let's start in the focusing part, because the number one place that groups go wrong with Six Sigma is being ill-focused. Now, a lot of the press seems to say that you need to get top leadership to commit and they need to direct the thing. And that's probably, I don't know if we need them to commit, but what we need is a leader who is committed to change in the organization. And usually it's an operational manager who's frustrated by the amount of defects and delay in the business. And if you find somebody who has that problem, Six Sigma will help them solve it. So I want you to write under the word focus this formula. defects plus delay equals lost profits. Defects plus delay equals lost profits. You see, I found that in every company, there are two factories. There's the main factory that delivers your product or service. And a lot of people think that this is only for manufacturing, but not true. Any kind of process produces defects, and it takes time. I don't care if it's a payroll process, or an IT process, or a healthcare process. All of these things take time and have defects involved in them. There was a recent study in healthcare back in 1999 that suggested that one person out of every 100 who are admitted to a hospital will die of some sort of medical mistake while they're in the hospital. That's 1 out of 100. Now, if that were true of all the flights that fly every day in America, you know, we'd have 30, 40 planes crashing every day. And I don't think anyone would fly. So error rates occur everywhere. So what we want to do is find ways to start to focus our attention on what is it we want to fix. And I encourage you to only work on those portions of your business that are the mission-critical pieces. You know, you've heard the old 80-20 rule that 20% of your business causes 80% of the waste and rework and so on. But I've found it's much narrower than that. As little as 4% of your business produces over half of the waste, rework, delay that eat up your profits. And it can eat up in a given business. Most companies, you know, that are successful get to 1, 2, or 3% error rates in their processes. This is about a 3 sigma level. And at 3 sigma, you're actually losing somewhere between 25 and 40% of every dollar you spend. So if you're a $10 million company, you're probably throwing away $2.5 to $4 million in expenses that you do not need to throw away. So there's tremendous opportunities in here. That's why Six Sigma is all about bottom line benefits. Can we find $250,000 projects and save that amount of money and add it to the bottom line, or shift our people from the fix-it factory over into the real factory so where they can start serving customers instead of just cleaning up our own debris? So what I do is create with leadership a master improvement story. You do not start teams. You do not charter teams. You do not waste a lot of time doing that. Because if a leader with a good quality consultant or internal consultant cannot figure out how to do the next few things, then the team cannot figure out how to do it either. And it would be a waste of their time and a waste of the company's time. And billions of dollars have been wasted doing this. So I'd encourage you not to waste a lot of time. So there's four key tools I use in the master improvement story. The first one is the tree diagram. So what I want to find out is, from the leader's perspective, what are the key indicators or measurements that we can use to track where's all the pain in this organization? You know, what are the types of defects? Is it service order defects? Is it purchase order defects? Is it fulfillment, manufacturing, service delivery? Is it the actual delivery of the product? Is it billing? Is it invoicing? Is it payments? Where's the biggest pain? And we want to start and say, with this tree diagram, what do we want to do? Well, we want to make ourselves better, faster, and cheaper than the competition. Well, better is all about reducing defects. Faster is about reducing the cycle time or being speedy. And cost actually falls out of, or cheaper falls out of, reducing the cost of these defects and these delays. So I want to find out what that indicator is going to be. Is it service order errors? Is it address incorrect? What is it that's causing us the biggest problem? And then we can really focus on that. The next tool we use is the line graph. And a line graph is just designed to show how your process performs over time. So we want to know how many defects there are per day, how many order errors there are per day, how many errors there are in a given batch of product that we manufacture. We want to know how many patient falls there are in a hospital. We want to know how many surgical site infections there are postoperatively. We want to know all these things. And then the next piece is to develop the third tool, which is the Pareto chart. And the Pareto chart is simply a bar chart and a line graph, which show the cumulative things that contribute to this overall performance. You know, what are the key things that flow in here? I worked with a wireless company that was having problems with their billing and ordering. They were having about a 17% order error rate a day, which meant several thousand orders were falling out, and it was costing them $12 to $15 a piece to fix each one of these orders that were falling out of the system. And they had to hire 50 temp workers to try and clean up the backlog of stuff that was backed up for about 2 months. So we had this line graph of the defects per day, and then we were able to narrow it down into the types of defects, the types of errors they were getting. And there were 6 main error buckets out of 200. So if you think about 6 out of 200, that's more like maybe 3% of the total types of errors were causing 90% of the total error rate. So what we did is we came up with a Pareto chart that shows that these were the top 6 boxes, and then we wrote problem statements about each one of the top 6 boxes, and these are the things that go into the next step in the process. And the last thing in here is I use a cost of quality matrix to determine what are the actual costs of these defects. You know, what do they really cost us? And in the case that I was looking at, the service order errors, turns out that it was about $12 or $15 in people time. But it didn't count their space, and it didn't count their systems they were using, and it didn't count all the overhead to manage them, and all that other stuff that goes in there. So odds are good that it was probably costing them $75 to $100 an order to get this particular, each one of these errors cleaned up. So that's the first step. And a leader and a good quality consultant can do this. And usually it can be done in 2 to 3 days. Shouldn't take any longer than that. This is really data mining. You know, most companies have lots of data, and the thing you have to do is figure out what data to throw away and what data to keep. And some data is going to be really useful. Again, 450, right? 4% of your total data is going to give you 50% of the bang for the buck. And the hard part is winnowing out what's not useful. So that's the first step. And in Six Sigma, these are the key things that you want to do. And you can start to make big breakthrough improvements by doing this. Now, if we move over into the next box, I want you to divide the improvement box in vertically into 2 halves. And at the top of the left half, I want you to write the word quality. And at the top of the right half, I want you to write the word speed. There was a recent survey done in Quality Digest magazine. They asked the respondents what were the key tools and methods that they had used that were producing, you know, the biggest bang for the buck in Six Sigma. And so right under the word quality, I want you to write this phrase, root cause analysis. Because that was the very first thing that came up. This is where you use the fishbone diagram and you ask, why was this happening? And in the case of our service order errors, we found out it was when they were trying to take the orders out. They didn't have the right information to take them out, so they were continuing to bill people they shouldn't bill. They were having problems putting them in. And then they had problems sometimes when they changed a customer's record. And as we went through each one of those 6 bars, we got different answers to this in-out change situation in this IT system. And the fishbone diagram is the key tool you use here to display the learnings of the team. And I'll tell you, the Ishikawa diagram is a little confusing to people, but a good quality consultant can help you lay out the thing in the appropriate order so you can really see the development of how did we get to the idea that this particular widget is the root cause. The next thing you want to come up with is, what are our countermeasures? What things do we want to put in place? In this, the wireless system, what happened was we had a whole bunch of folks coming up with revised business requirements, and then we had to implement all those changes in the information system that did all the service orders. Well, that took probably 3 to 4 months. But at the end of 4 months, when all that went in, we reduced that service order rate from error rate from 17% down to 3%. We'd eliminated 5 of the top 6 types of errors and cut the 6th one in half. So that was a dramatic reduction. And it started saving them about $250,000 a month. And they were able to lay off all the temp people they'd hired to clean up the backlog. And they could get back to doing business as usual. Now, one of the things I find is in most companies, every process, you know, like ordering might have a 1, 2, or 3% error rate. Then billing might have a 1, 2, or 3% error rate. And processing payments might have a 1, 2, or 3% error rate. And these are all what are called 3 sigma. This is the level you're at. 6 sigma normally measures everything, defects, in parts per million. Well, a 1% error rate translates to 10,000 parts per million. So this is somewhere between 3 and 4 sigma. And when you add them all up, though, all of the different errors across the whole experience of your company, you could easily have an error rate of 6, 12, 18%. So there's dramatic opportunities to reduce these errors in every one of the processes. And you can quickly, usually move in about 12 to 24 months, you can move from 3 sigma to 5 sigma, which is only 300 parts per million instead of maybe 30,000 parts per million. Just using a little bit of focus and some root cause analysis. It's blindingly simple. Now let's switch over to the next column under speed. The next biggest tool that was pointed out to in this survey from Quality Digest was process mapping or flowcharting. So the key tool here is the flowchart. And the process we want to do here is start to examine the speed of this process. And the way you do this is what I call value-added analysis, which is described in Six Sigma Simplified, and there's a template in the QI macros that'll assist you with this. But essentially, all you do is you look at each box, each arrow, and each diamond in your flowchart, and you say, how long does this take? And I worked with one group that was doing like insurance claims, and they were taking up to 140 days to do a claim, which is entirely too long, isn't it? And when we looked at the whole process, that was the clock time, but when we looked at how much time was actually work time, where people were really handling the actual request, it was under 8 hours. And so when I asked them, you know, how long does it take you to review a claim? Well, they said 25 days. And I said, well, so you sit there for 25 days looking at this one sheet of paper? And they said, well, no. And I said, well, what really happens? And they said, well, it takes about 10 minutes to log it in. And then it could be up to 25 days before it rises to the top of the stack. Oh. So there's a 24-day lag between login and actually validating that order. They said, yeah. And I said, and then you may have to request additional information. How long does that take? Well, that may take up to 6 months. Oh, my gosh. You know, when we looked at it, all the delays, and this is the thing I found, all the delays are in the arrows. They are not in the boxes where people are working. People are working as hard as they can work. But the thing going through the process is lazy and idle about 90% of the time. So the key to reducing the cycle time for anything is to reduce the delay. In my own business, you know, I used to take orders and then I would send out my software in a priority mail package. It would take about 3 days. Well, people didn't want to wait. So I put it up on the website so that you can go there, order, and download immediately. And you can get all the documentation immediately, right? And we'll send you out the other stuff as a follow-up if you want it. So what does that do? It gives them immediate access to their stuff. I had a student call up and ordered the software, and she needed it for a project she was going to do that night, right? And I said, go to the web and download it immediately. And she did, and off she went. So these are the kinds of things that we start to look at when we're wanting to improve the speed of our process. So these are the top two things. Root cause analysis and value-added analysis will take you from 3 sigma to 5 sigma in about 12 to 24 months. And we offer consulting, so if you need help with that or you need help with getting focused, because getting focused on the first few projects is the hardest thing to learn how to do, I believe. We can help you with that, either remotely or on-site. Now let's move down to the next box underneath there, said sustain. Once you make these improvements, one of the things I've noticed is the reason most companies run into a wall at about Three Sigma is because up until then they've been using common sense and gut feel and trial and error. Just typical people doing typical things. And I'll tell you what, you know, the human being and our sensory apparatus seems to run out of gas at about Three Sigma. Somewhere around 1-3% error. Because the things don't happen often enough for us to notice the patterns. So we want to start to make these improvements. But when you make a breakthrough improvement, all of a sudden, your ability to track it may go away. And what happens if you don't put some processes in place to monitor and sustain that, you'll slide back to 1, 2, or 3% error rate in a matter of, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 months. You just go back to doing it automatically. So in the sustain mode, we want to figure out how to monitor and sustain the new levels of improvement. There are three key tools. The first one is the flowchart, because we're going to redraw the flowchart of the new process. So we have a new way of doing business after we've changed this thing. The next thing is we're going to add in some control charts. So that line graph you used originally, well, we're now going to do some statistical processes on it and draw some control limits on there so we can tell if it's stable, capable of producing things consistently and sustaining this thing. And you'll be able to track if you start to fall back. And in a matter of just a few data points, usually 6 to 8, you'll be able to tell that, hey, we're sliding in some direction or another. That's the power of the control chart. And our QI Macros software will allow you to easily draw all these charts, and then all you have to do is interpret it. You don't have to worry about all the formulas. Don't forget the math. Does the chart tell you if you're stable or if there's something odd going on that you need to attend to? Because otherwise it would be out of your awareness. You won't be able to notice what's going on. You know, somebody like Sony produces 3 million television sets, and only one of them may be defective. And so they don't bother to test everything. You know, they just send them out, and if one breaks, they would just replace it with a better set. And that's the kind of way I think we'd like our world to work, isn't it? If you order food, you get what you expected, and you expect your bill to be right. We expect that in lots of places, but we keep, I don't know about you, but I keep running into situations where I'm constantly having to unscrew something that was screwed up by a process somewhere else. And the people aren't the problem, it is the process. Now, the third tool is the histogram. And the histogram is used on variable data like time or length or weight or width or volume. And it's typically used in manufacturing and not so much in services. The reason for this is, as you can imagine, if you're producing axles for Ford or something, there's a certain diameter to that axle. And it can't vary by more than plus or minus maybe a thousandth of an inch or something, or 5/1000ths of an inch. And if it does, then it won't fit onto the hub of whoever else is supplying the wheels or whatever it is. So this is used extensively in manufacturing, and you see it less and less often in the service world because we don't measure much of anything variable except for time. And the idea here is you have an upper and lower spec limit. Think of like a pair of goalposts, if you will. And people want to actually find ways to make sure that all of your process stuff that you're producing fall between the upper and lower spec limits. And there are some capability statistics that let you know how capable you are, whether you are at, you know, 1, 3, 4, 5, or 6 sigma. So it's a very useful tool in manufacturing, and I find it less often used in service industries. So those are the three key tools that let us continue to say, here's our process and here's how we monitor and sustain that improvement. Now, for people who are thinking about ISO 9000, the new ISO 9000 standards for ISO 9000-2000 say that In the old days, the old standard said, do you have a process? Are you following it? So do you have a flowchart and do you have process documentation and are you following it? Yes or no? But it really didn't have much in there about are you improving. Actually, didn't have anything in there about are you improving your process and sustaining it. So what we want is, with this new transition to ISO 9000-2000, it's the 2000 standard, you have to have ways to do these improvement efforts on speed and quality, defects and delay, and you have to have ways to sustain and monitor it. So these tools are essential to becoming registered for ISO. These are the key quality tools. Now, there's some other documentation and things you have to get into. I'm not an ISO expert, but these are things that you're going to need if you're going after ISO certification so that you can supply bigger, broader, wider companies, maybe the European community, with your product or service. So these are kind of the three big steps of the improvement. Focusing, then making improvements, either reducing defects or delay, using root cause analysis and value-added analysis, and then sustaining that improvement with control charts and histograms. And the last thing that has to happen is you have to come back and recognize, reward, and review and refocus. So here's some of the structure of what I've learned. There's over 50 years of research into how companies adopt, adapt, or reject change. It's called The Diffusion of Innovations. And there's actually a book by that name, The Diffusion of Innovations, written by Everett Rogers. And I'd encourage you to look at that book because it is power-packed with how to make better ways of implementing change. And one of the things he suggests in there is if you want to increase or accelerate the rate that a company adopts a change, you need to reduce the number of people involved. So this gets back to what I was talking about earlier, the 450 rule. 4% of the business causes over half of your waste, rework, and delay. And so if you start with the first 4% and you bring in people who are really not the formal leaders, but the informal leaders, they're the people that everybody goes to for information about the business or how to do something. You know, they're people who've been around a while, know their way around, and everybody trusts their expertise. If you get them involved in these initial teams, and then once they're successful, and you have to ensure that they're successful, because they can just as easily kill you, right? If it's not successful, they can just as easily kill the whole idea. And the way you make sure it's successful is by laser focusing that initial few teams that you do. But once a team succeeds, why not have them present to the leadership team? Why not give them a reward that's not monetary? You know, maybe it's one time on a group, we got a set of Letterman's jackets from Warner Brothers, had all the Looney Tune characters on them. And they were just something we would have never bought for ourselves, and they were totally unexpected. And it united that team like nobody's business and made us all the more committed to make some big improvements. So what are some ways that you can start to bring the teams and get them recognition in front of the formal leadership? And some other ways to give them some status, like a jacket that not everybody has. You know, it creates the haves and the have-nots in a way, but it creates a need to belong to that club, creates a status. And that will start to create some pull. And then all of these people that were successful, very often there'll be a few centers of influence, and they'll start to talk to their friends about what they did and how successful it was. And you come back around, you refocus on the next 4%, and you bring in some more people. And you go around, and you bring in 4% more and 4% more. And what they found in the diffusion of innovations is if you get 4% of the people to do it, it'll stay in your organization. It becomes part of the fabric. It's not an overwhelming part, but it sticks. Then, once you get to about 16 to 20% conversion, it's like critical mass, and it will just reach out and just take over the organization. It will just zoom. And isn't that a lot easier than the way that most people are saying you should do it, which is top-down commitment, train lots of black belts, train lots of green belts, train lots of team members, go out and start lots of teams. What a waste. You know, we're wasting millions and billions of dollars that could be used more usefully elsewhere. Simply by laser focusing, doing a few small things that are going to have big results on our mission-critical processes, and doing that repeatedly until we reach that critical mass and it takes off. Even if you don't reach a critical mass, so what? You're going to have profound improvement in productivity and profitability because you switch people out of your fix-it factory into your regular factory doing the important things, serving customers, meeting needs, creating new products. And you probably will end up growing your business because customers will start to notice you just have a better product. And then you're going to need more people, and then you're going to need more stuff, and the business grows. It's quite synergistic, it's very systematic about how this will grow if you let it. So that's it. Four key steps. And I call them, and this was in that period between TQM and Six Sigma, I created this acronym, FISH, for Focus, Improve, Sustain, and Honor. The new model out there in the world is DMAIC, or DMAIC for short, which stands for Define, Measure, Analyze, and Improve, and Control. But it's hard to say, and it's harder to do. Isn't it easier just go fish? And again, the key tools in Focus is you want a tree diagram to help say, where are we going? Why are we going there? Line graphs for defects, Pareto charts of the causes of those defects, and then you go into root cause analysis and come up with a fishbone diagram that says, what's the real root causes? And in improvement, we also look at the speed. We want to use value-added analysis to reduce all the delay. And the delay is in the arrows between processes. It is not in the processes themselves, unless there are a lot of rework processes. Rework processes are usually not that useful. And then, once you've made that improvement, sustain. Redraw the flowchart to show the new process. Set up some control charts. Control charts come off of your line graph that you had earlier. And your histogram, if you need it for your production capability. Those are the key tools, and then recognize, reward, review, sustain, and refocus, and come back to it. And in a matter of 12 to 24 months, you can move from 3 to 4 to 5 sigma. You can do it in as little as 12 months. And you can do it in any aspect of the business. Could be your information systems, could be your accounting practices, could be your, how you make a bed in a hotel. Dramatic improvements can be done in a very short time period. And it's up to you. You know, you can turn your cash cow into a golden goose. Because when you start to get all of these excess costs out of the way, all of it falls to the bottom line. So you start ending up with $250,000 project here, $250,000 project there. In a $10 million company, there should be at least four easy-to-find $250,000 projects. And probably another four a little bit harder to find $250,000 projects. There should be a couple million dollars laying on the table in a Three Sigma business that has $10 million a year. You know, I continue to do this in my own business, and it bumps my profits when I do. So it's up to you to take on these simple practices of focusing, improving, and sustaining, and allow that to carry your business to new levels of productivity and profitability. If you have questions, you know, feel free to give us a call, 888-468-1537. Visit our website, qimacros.com. And we have a wealth of resources out there that will help you get started. So click on free stuff, sign up for our e-zines, and look at all the tools that are out there that are available for free. Go grab our Six Sigma Action Plan and start to work your way through it, because you'll find that there are tremendous opportunities in your business that you haven't been able to see, but with Six Sigma and the tools of Six Sigma and its methods, you'll be able to see them and mine that hidden gold mine in your business. Thanks for listening. Talk to you again. Bye-bye.